Hey guys, welcome to episode 23 of the JV Club. If you have read the description or looked at the photos that come up on the Nerdist site, if that's the way into the podcast for you, then you know that this is a pretty unusual episode of the podcast. It is an interview with a dude, but it is not quite that simple. And obviously, if you read the description or if you're about to listen to the episode, you will hear more on that. But it's an episode I recorded several months ago, and I've been sitting on it for a little while because, you know, either there were some older episodes I needed to get out first or some newer episodes that came through that felt like they just needed to be released straight away for one reason or another. And it's funny because sometimes I don't know why I hold stuff and why I put stuff out right away, but interestingly enough, I couldn't have known that I would end up taking this job or that this job would even exist at HuffPost Live, which is the new online streaming content part of the Huffington Post that is going to be launching on Monday. But everything happened as it did. And interestingly, I was able to do a segment on transgender people, and that is now available to watch on the Huffington Post website. So I encourage you, if you're interested and if you want to see what my cousin looks like, I interviewed him with a couple of other people as part of this chat segment on HuffPost Live. And all you have to do to find it right now is go to the HuffingtonPost.com. And if you want to search the keyword transgenderation, you will find my segment, and you can watch it online. That's transgenderation. I suddenly felt like I was in a spelling bee for a made-up word that we created for this segment. So yeah, if you want to check it out, I'm super excited. I think the timing worked out. I just did the segment this week. So it felt like, wow, well, now that I've done the segment, I should absolutely release the podcast episode. And those two things can kind of feed nicely into each other. So that is that. Shout out wise, I've got a really long list, and I think that it is missing some Twitter people, missing some Facebook people, missing some emails I got, and missing some iTunes feedback. Again, I don't want to make the list so endlessly long, but at the same time, I wish I could just personally call each and every one of you and thank you so much for the feedback. It's just continuing to brighten my life on a daily basis. Jeremy, Curtis, Nika, Sarah P, Eric, Krista, Chase, Joanna, Chris B, John C, Betsy, Theo, Michelle, Jim, Rachel, Ben, Erica, Janelle, Robert, Coco, Rebecca, Ryan, Zoe, Alex, Russell, Alec, John in Germany, Greg L, Nick, Ariel, Ariel, Moof. I was very excited to get to say the word Moof. Amanda, Wade, and Robert, thank you guys so much. And the last thing I'm going to say about this episode, by the way, you can probably tell from my voice, I'm finally getting well. And thanks for the well wishing, and thanks for telling me that nasal Varney wasn't too annoying to many of you. The feedback from Cool Ops episode was divine. And I don't want you guys to think that I'm just becoming like the didactic podcaster where everything has to be kind of heavy material. This particular episode is not terribly sad. You know, it's not even that heavy, I don't think, even though we're talking about kind of a touchy subject for some people with transgender folks. And there are plenty more goofy, silly episodes to come. So the timing of this just worked out that Kulop and Julian are back to back, and they're, you know, a little more complicated of subject matter. But rest assured, I'm still out there just giggling it up with the ladies as well. So I hope you enjoy this, and you guys are the best. Okay.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Been wanting to say this since I started recording this podcast, and I'm very excited to be able to say on a very special episode of the JV Club.
But it is a very special episode. It's special for a couple of different reasons. One of them is that that I am podcasting for the first time a member of my own family, which I'm very, 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 very excited about. We live in different cities, and we don't get to see each other as much as we would both like. I was saying love and like at the same time, so I said live. And the other really kind of extraordinary thing about this is that, as you guys know, I just interview women, and I'm interviewing a man today. But the reason that we're doing this interview for you all is that Julian is a transgender man. So when he was in high school, technically he was a she, although even that's arguable because I've known him my whole life. And so we're going to talk a little bit about his experience, and the hope is to kind of help educate you guys and maybe, you know, just acquaint you with put a human face. Maybe you do know some people, maybe you don't, but we might even have a few laughs because he's also incredibly funny and awesome. So welcome, 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 Julian.
Thank you, Janet. I'm very honored that you asked me to be here. I agree with what you said that, you know, it gives people a chance to get to know somebody a little bit who is transgendered. And I think it's a real interesting spin that you're having me on because my experience in high school, I was identifying as female, although I didn't feel that way. I was socialized as such. So, yeah, I think it'll be a very interesting interview.
Well, I don't, and it doesn't have to be you know, nobody, I don't want to shy away from asking tough questions, and I don't want you to feel like I have to put a light coating on it. But I also want to just say a couple of things up top about my memories of you when you were in high school, because you're 10 years older than I am. And I looked up to you and just thought you were the coolest in the world. And you had a waterbed.
Oh my God.
You were the only person I know who had a waterbed. I think it was my first experience ever even like understanding what a waterbed was. And I remember that you had Kiss posters. I think you had a Kiss poster on your ceiling. Does that sound right? Am I crazy?
Maybe that was Burt Reynolds in the Cosmopolitan magazine on the fur rug. That was on the ceiling. But yes, I did have, I can't believe I admitted that. Can we rewind?
Did you really have Burt Reynolds?
Well, I kind of wanted to be him. Oh so like, God. You know, under the guise of, oh, he's really cute. You know?
I love I did that. I don't remember a Burt Reynolds poster, but did you like Kiss? Am I just inventing
all this? Oh, I did. Okay. I like Kiss, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, I had all that stuff.
Okay, you did. And I also remember that you chewed Juicy Fruit gum.
I did.
And now you guys understand what it's like to be a transgender man. Thanks for coming in,
that
Julian.
That was great. I think we really informed the public.
We really lifted
that
the veil.
That was great. Great job.
We really lifted the veil. Thank you. Well, you, let's, thank you for putting up with my, I can't believe it was Burt Reynolds. I'm so excited that I wish I would have remembered that. You know what? I would have spent the last like 20 years teasing you mercilessly if I had remembered that. Now I get to look forward to the next.
Well, I wish I never told you that the poster.
Too bad. Why don't you tell us a little about where you're from, where you were born and raised?
Okay. Well, I was born in California in a place called Crenshaw, but my mom moved me to Phoenix, Arizona when I was very young. So I feel like I'm a native of Phoenix. I've spent all my life there. Family, of course, you lived in Tucson with your dad, my Uncle Phil. My grandparents lived in Prescott, so I kind of spent time in all those places. Went to school, went to grade school and high school in Phoenix. Do you want me to get into...
And did you went to grade school and high school in Phoenix, and did we discuss whether you have any siblings?
You.
I know, I just wanted to act like we just met, but... Yeah, we are each other's siblings because neither of us have any brothers or sisters, but we spent more time together when we were younger.
I do have a stepsister but my mom didn't marry her father till I was 17. So really, you were the child I grew up with, and I feel like you are much more than just a cousin to me.
I couldn't agree with that more. What and your parents split up when you were really little.
They did. I was a baby, so I didn't really have any contact with my father growing up.
And I guess we can just launch right into it. I would love to know for you when you realized that you felt like something was amiss, to just put it, I mean, just to put it very lightly, but right. in terms of your gender and how you were perceived by the outside world versus how you felt in your own head and in your own body.
You know, for me, the moment that I had an awareness of myself, I felt like a little boy. And, you know, I didn't have words or dialogue for what this was. When you're a young child, you feel, you know who you are. It's when you start getting messages from society, like, go to the girls' line. You have to use a girls' restroom. Those kind of things just didn't really click with me. But, you know, everyone's telling you this, so you think, okay. But I felt that there was a way that I could, that this would change, that I would wake up. I used to pray that God would send the witch from Bugs Bunny with the pointy hat. Seriously, I'm so serious about this. That was like our Saturday cartoons, and I saw her change a man into a frog or a lady into a rock. So I figured God could send her, and she'd do that wand thing, and I would wake up and be a boy. And I'd look under the, and I, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. So I kind of gave up on that.
So you knew from a young age. I mean, I remember when I was in preschool, Sean, I shouldn't say his last name, but I really wanted to. A little boy pulled down his pants and showed me his penis, and I right. pulled down my pants, and we just looked at right. each other. And that was my first memory, since I didn't have siblings,
right.
of seeing somebody else's gear and right. understanding that it was different from mine. How early on, like, can you remember the association of, like, of your private parts as a child being different and knowing that you, what you wanted or what felt like it was missing?
That's really an interesting question, because I've gone over that in my own head. You know, I'm 46 years old now, so memories start to fade a little bit, specifics.
Sure.
But I know a couple of things that happened. My mom was, I have an amazing mother who's very loving and liberal and accepting of me. But when I was a little kid, she had a book, and I remember it was green and black, and it was a book about where babies come from. And it showed a fetus. And I don't know if there were pictures of people's anatomy. It was very clinical.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking. But this is a man. This is a woman. I just really didn't relate anything with women in any way. And I don't know if that was my first vision or idea of, okay, this is what a man is. This is what a man has. I do remember I had the same kind of experience. There was a boy, we were by the pool, and he asked me if I could tie his swimsuit bottom. So I pull him out to tie him, and I see, oh my gosh, he has this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it instinctively was something before I even saw one. It just always felt like something was missing for me. And I have to state that not all trans men want to get that surgery or necessarily need a penis to feel more male. And I don't either. It's just something that's always been missing and something I want. So there was that piece. And then I never wanted anything to do with girl games, girl clothes. My gender expression was always that of a male. So it was really young when this started for me.
It was. And I think that's certainly consistently in your experience, because you have mentored some other kids and because you're active right. in the community in Phoenix, and also you've sought out so much information and reading. Obviously, when you get to a point in your life, not to just jump really far ahead, but you get to a point in your life where that information is available to you and it's out in the open for you and for others, I know you just devoured as much information as you can get. And would right. you say that in large part, a lot of young children feel that way, that it's not, that it seems to be that a lot of people identify very, very early in their lives, who later decide that they're trans, like that it's not even really a later decision. It's, this right. has been a part of me for.
Yes. And it amazes me too, that these kids are able to, at that young of an age, say, no, this is who I am. And I asked a young man recently, why we have our stories parallel so much. We've had the same feelings about who we are. Why were you able at 5, 6 to tell your mom, no, I am a boy? And this internet, they have access to others like them. I didn't know anybody was like me for years and years and years. So this was a big secret that I learned how to push down, and I just adapted to make, we all want to fit in. We don't want to be ostracized. So what these youth have now is exposure. They know that there are others like them and that this is possible. this is possible to do, that it validates who they are.
And so when you on the podcast, everybody knows, like, kind of focus in on teenage years, as kind of a jumping off point. And obviously I wanted to talk about your childhood, a little bit before we got there, and we can always jump back and forth, and anything that occurs to you, please jump in.
Sure.
But let's use adolescence as a means of getting in, just because that is a time for everyone, straight, gay, bi, trans, everybody's hormones are going crazy.
Right.
So how did that, I guess, if you want to talk for a second about, or as long as you want, about who you were kind of gravitating towards when you were little, but then also who you gravitated towards as you entered into high school, and kind of what circles you felt most comfortable in and stuff like that.
Are you meaning who I wanted to hang out with, or who I was attracted to when you said?
Both. Actually.
Okay.
Who did you gravitate towards socially? Where could you feel most understood, if you in fact could feel understood at all?
Sure.
You know, and then who did you want to kiss? Who did you want to smooch?
Well, first I want to say that, and I think that it is so much easier if you are born female bodied. In how you express yourself, whether it's gender expression or sexual preference or any of that. So I have to say that I feel like I had an easier road than my transgender sisters did, because I was allowed to wear boys' clothes, play boys' games. It's called a tomboy. We have a name for it. It was a tomboy.
Yeah.
So I feel like I was allowed to express myself to a certain extent. So I hung out with the boys in the neighborhood. I hung out with little girls that wanted to play sports, the tomboys too. Never did I feel comfortable with the girls who wanted to play dolls, or I thought it was the games girls had were really stupid. I hope I'm not insulting anyone out there, but
you're allowed to
feel for that. Me, I just was like, you know, I don't want to jump rope with you guys at all. I'm going to go play baseball with these guys. You know, that's kind of who I gravitated toward. And I feel blessed that at least it was the 70s, you know, I don't even know the word transgendered was out in the public. So at least I had the ability to present masculinely to a certain point. There came a certain point where I had to actually kind of stop doing that a little bit.
And who were you attracted to?
Oh, girls.
Were you
always
to the girls who played the stupid games?
No,
that you
oh
to know
yeah,
part of?
Definitely. So I put up with it a little bit, you know. I would, you know, just to be around them or you know, to be in their space. But I really like wanted nothing to do with their. How boring! Like, play house? Would you? Okay. Would we stare at each other and, or I'd be the dad? You know what I mean? Someone has to be the dad. I'll do it. But yeah, I was definitely attracted to the very feminine girl, and you know, I knew at this point, you know, now I'm in maybe third, fourth, fifth grade, and I knew that this wanting to be a boy was just that. That's all I could do was want. So my imagination started to expand a bit, and I was in love with a girl, and I'm not going to say her name because if she listened to this, I don't want to freak her out. But I swear to you, from third grade until seventh grade, and I go to her house every day after school, and we had a wash, and I built a fort, and I pretended we were going to be married. And I would never say this to her, but in my mind, when we were in that little fort that I had built our home, and I would marry her one day, and I was the husband and she was the wife. So I was always attracted to women, but I was going to be the man, you know what I mean? But yeah, this went on for years. I really...
And did she let you kiss her and stuff?
Okay, well, I was kind of manipulative, and she had a brother and a sister. Her sister was pretty too, so I made up this game that whoever you find in the dark, you get to kiss. So I made sure I knew where the brother was, and I stayed away from that area.
Oh, that's so
funny. That's the only way, but I would never, ever, I've never told her that I liked her or how I felt. Never to this day.
It's interesting because before I was an adolescent, before I was a teenager, I made out with so many little girls, and I think it was maybe I'm completely wrong, and maybe I will get teased mercilessly or worse for admitting that, but going back to what you were saying about it just being easier for girls, and they can kind of get away with more in terms of
right.
how they're expressing themselves or what they're experimenting with, and that we're taught societally that it's okay to... that it's okay as a woman to really talk about your feelings or, you know, what have you. I guess I got the sense that before adolescence, little girls were just kissing each other and kissing boys and figuring it all out. And it was just like playing boyfriend, girlfriend, or playing doctor. Like there right. was sort of a gender blur as children because there's just this sort of general curiosity about sexuality. And then when you become an adolescent, it started to seem like it got more and more pigeonholed about like, no, these boys like other boys, these girls like girls, these girls wow. like boys. So it's interesting to me that you had this experience with this girl that, you know, you kind of got to do what I was doing, but there was so much more weight attached to it right. for you because it was really about identity.
It was, but also too, that was 10 years before you had your experiences.
You're so right.
And it was, you know, I think I heard the word fag in school, but I didn't know it meant a gay person. It was an insult thrown at a boy to another boy. Or, I mean, they were still even using insults like they would call another boy a woman. That was an insult they used when I was growing up. So our the whole gay experience was becoming a little more visible when you were in high school. It was seen a little bit more.
But even not that much right. in some ways. But right. yeah, no, but you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, we talked on the podcast before about gravitating towards groups like theater groups and places right. and even in the kind of when in my early years in high school going to like gothy kind of punk clubs and stuff, it was like really okay to be gay there and
right.
would kiss there, but you wouldn't see that in the halls of my high school by any stretch sure. of the imagination. So you played sports in
I
high
did
school?
I did.
And were there other girls in the kind of tomboy world who then started identifying as lesbians?
Not in high school. In fact, I had a best friend growing up from age 10 until, gosh, really until I started this transition. We are no longer speaking, but growing up, she's gay. And she told me later on, now we're in college, that she knew this about herself, but said I would not deal with it until I got into college. So there was nobody I knew who was actively acting out on their lesbian feelings, their attractions to other women. It was basically get through high school, play sports, find things that you like, enjoy your friends, and don't do anything until you get out of high school.
And it sounds to me like you were never, ever going to put yourself in the camp of, I guess I'll just go out with this guy.
No, actually, I did. Oh, God, it was horrible. I tried, and it was the most... think of, like... your dad, my uncle, like going, all right, I suppose I should just try going out with this guy. Ooh, it just doesn't work. Yeah. And for me, I lived in a society where I felt like you hear messages like, well, maybe you haven't met the right man, or maybe you, all right, well, I went out on a couple dates and they were just awkward. And I have to wonder, were those guys gay? Because I was so masculine in my presentation. Maybe this was an easy way for them to kind of be with a guy, but not.
I think that's a great question.
Know, maybe we used each other. I don't know.
That happens a lot. I think that still happens.
I don't know, but never like a relationship with a guy. It was always, oh gosh, I feel like I should at least try and sleep with him. And then I swear to you, it was the same thing. I was, get off me. And I just like pick him up and I would seriously like, no, get off me. We're yeah. done. I could never like follow through with it. Or the date I went on was so awkward and uncomfortable. It was almost something like I felt like I had to try.
Yeah.
And it just never worked.
I can't imagine adding that pressure and that discomfort and the recognition that it just ain't right.
Right.
On top of everything else. What was the rest? Let's pull. I mean, you can't pull gender out of it because it was so close. It's so closely tied to who we are.
Right.
And how we experience every single day of our lives. So it's silly for me to say, let's pull out of that for a second. But what was the rest of your teenagerhood like? You said you love Burt Reynolds.
I would always like find, you know, the girls around me. Oh, I think this guy's really, you know, celebrities. This guy's really hot. This guy's really hot. Well, I would have to pick somebody. So it was always somebody I'd want to be like. Oh, my God, I totally wanted to be Burt Reynolds. He got all the girls. He had that cool mustache. He had flashy cars. So really, for me, that was it. But, you know, I really have to say, Janet, that I had an amazing childhood. I loved my high school experience. I think for me, it was just about, like I said earlier, adapting, being safe. There were certain things I just didn't talk about, but I was a good athlete. I had a great group of friends.
Were you a good student?
Oh, I was an amazing... No, I'm lying. I was a horrible student.
I mean, of course, because I do remember knowing that you were... I remember you even as a teenager being like, don't be like me. I kind of hate scholastics. And I was like, oh, my dad is a teacher. That won't be a problem for me.
Well, my poor mother was a teacher too. And I was super excited if I got a C. Like, Mom, look at my grade. This is awesome. I passed. And I think it was just... There were so many other things that were way more important to me than school. I had subjects that I loved history. I loved Man in Society. I think it was like a sociology type class in high school. I loved those things, but I was just more interested in sports. And
did you have a car pretty much right after you got your license, or did you?
You know what? I drove my mom's Maverick with a green vinyl top. It was really awesome. It was really a chick magnet, and I had to fight them off. But,
I guess I should say in terms of our family life, we really did have an extraordinary family full of very cool, funny, weird, great people that were kind of an extended family, like that we thought of as kind of aunts and uncles in a really good way.
We did. I know that I was never shamed for any way that I expressed myself. My family every day since I've been born, I've been told I'm loved or felt that I'm loved by our family. So I feel very blessed, and I can't imagine having any other childhood.
Yeah.
You know?
So you weren't crazy about, overall, you weren't crazy about necessarily school and grades and stuff. And so was there an expectation about college?
You know, my mom wanted me, of course, you know, for my own benefit, she really promoted college as something that would be beneficial for my future, and really tried to find out what it would be that I would like to do. And funny enough, she thought, I'm going to be a social worker because I think it'd be cool to work with people. And she said, I will support you 100%, but just let me tell you, it's going to be really hard, and I'll tell you why. You're going to see a lot of really hard things, and you're not going to be paid a lot of money, but I'll support you. But what I think you'd really be good at is physical therapy. So of course, now I'm 46, and I think that would be something that I really would like to do. To be a PT assistant, but never do I feel that I was pushed. My mom kind of let me make my own decisions, gave her input, and that was it.
And so what was, I guess what I'm asking is, did you experiment with like drinking and drugs as many of us did, guilty as charged,
right,
in high school?
I did. I partied a lot in high school. It was mainly on the weekends. Like I said, I was a good athlete, and sports were really important to me.
You kind of can't party that much.
Right.
I guess you can.
You know, we'd smoke a little pot sometimes between classes, but I never really ditched or any of that kind of stuff. I kept it to the weekends and did drink excessively a few times, you know, kind of like kids do. They're experimenting. But by the time I got to college, I really like went crazy with it, and I am a recovering drug addict alcoholic, so I really like had a lot of hard years with the drugs and alcohol.
What was college?
I went to Glendale Community very briefly, and I just got some little small scholarships, so I thought, okay, you know, and I think it was part of the divorce decree that my dad was to pay for college, so I think that I did, you know, 1 year and then another half semester. And then I spent the money. I thought it was mine. So I got this really angry call, like, why aren't you going to school? Well, I didn't know, Dad. Money's gone. But so, yeah, I mean, I thought about everything but school when I was there at college. What party is going on? What, you know?
I want to get back to that, but it just occurred to me. I sometimes try to think about what questions I would ask if I were listening to this, and sometimes I get so locked up into what's going on that I forget to think like, oh, actually, maybe I should have asked this, or maybe the listener will be wondering this. And when you just said that about your dad and the divorce decree, I realized I wanted to just, I think there might be people out there, I'm assuming there are people out there who, when they start characterizing gender identity are looking for societal and environmental causes rather than what you said early on in the podcast,
sure,
which is that you knew it. Nothing, you know, you knew like, you know, it's not right. A matter of, oh, but I'm, have people said like, oh, did you not have a father figure when you know what I mean? And
right.
I'm just wondering if I guess I want to ask that question. I know the answer because I know right. your relationship with my dad, but right. I'll let you answer it. So
yeah,
Julian, is it possible that you just didn't have a great dad and your mom was single for so long that that's why you identified as a man? I mean, even hearing myself right. say it, it's like, that's ridiculous, but...
Yeah, no, I don't agree with that, and I've heard that theory, and, you know, you hear it about, too, that lesbians were molested, and, you know, and statistically, 1 in 3 girls are molested, so there's not 1 in 3 lesbians out there, so I think it's kind of along the same lines, and I have to tell you, I had amazing father figures in my life. I could never have asked for better father figures. Your father, my uncle... my grandfather, my Uncle Don, my Uncle George, and these, my Uncle Don and Uncle George were not actual uncles, but I gave them that title because I felt like they were closer to me than extended family.
Yeah.
So I had these amazing men in my life, gentle, kind, treated women very well. I couldn't have been given better examples of what it is to be a man. So
yeah, I just wanted to throw that yeah. out there, guys. In case, you know, you guys had a natural, and I don't mean to criticize that question, because I think as you're becoming more educated, or maybe some of you already are very educated on the subject, I'm just trying to think of some of the questions that come up and that get raised for people. So can you describe kind of when you started going crazy with drinking and with drugs, and if you feel like some of that was tied to what you were going through that was different than some, you know, obviously there are addicts who come from all walks of life,
right.
but what was your experience like?
Well, like I said, it really kind of took hold in, I remember the first time that I drank for reasons other than enjoyment was in my first year of college, and I was on a softball team. Okay. A lot of things were going on. First, my best friend, who was kind of my lifeline a little bit, went to a whole different college.
And your best friend had no idea. You never said, sometimes I feel like I'm a guy. And
oh, God, no. No, okay, first off, now I'm entering the lesbian community, and especially back then, the last thing you want to say is, hey, guys, I'm really glad to be a part of your community. Thanks for welcoming me, but I wish I had a penis. I wish I was a guy. I knew instinctively, there is no way I can talk about it, and I finally found a group to belong to. So, you know, the drinking and stuff, going to gay bars, I think in Phoenix we had 3 lesbian bars. That was it. And the community was so small, but you go out there and what do? You drink, yeah. There's drugs. There was no other thing to do unless you went to a house party, but it's a house party and there's more drugs and more alcohol. So it really kicked in then. And I have to say too, that my addiction and, my alcoholism is not due to the fact that I'm transgendered. I do believe that I have a disease. It was my way of coping with life. I think that was my biggest roadblock, is now I'm in college, I'm on my own, and the world scared the crap out of me. Like, I don't know how to do this. I want to be a little kid again. And so it was my coping mechanism to drink and use drugs and alcohol. I thought it made me like a really good dancer and made me like really attractive and, you know, all those lies, you know, it helped me deal with life better, but that's not what happened.
And so when did you leave school?
I think I played a season of softball, season of basketball. Look, I'm relating how long I was in school by the sports I played. I don't even know what I took, but yeah, I did. I think it was about a year, and then I maybe took a semester off and went back for another, season of softball, and then I was done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what came next?
You know, just I got into the workforce. I got into pretty male-dominated fields right away. My first job was with a place called J.B. Rogers Pipe Manufacturing Company. And basically, my real important job was I was sanding down fiberglass pipe. So I had little particles of glass in my skin every night. You know, they had a layoff. And then I got into roofing. I did roofing for a couple different roofing companies. Oh, my God, I did... professional wrestling for a little bit.
That's the only one that I really know about.
That was
I don't remember
right.
I don't remember fiberglass piping.
Yeah, it was just roofing. A menial job, whatever I could get. My poor mother, I tell my mom, she's like trying to do a budget with me. And I'm like, you know what, mom? She goes, how much do you have for food? And I said, $10. She goes, for a month? Mom, $10 is fine. As long as I have a pack, carton of cigarettes and I can buy a 6-pack of beer, I'm fine. I mean, really, I was a mess. I was just a hot mess. So yeah, I did these little menial jobs and ran into a guy at some point in the gym who told me he was training some girls for professional wrestling. So I did that for a little bit. That was crazy.
What attracted you about that? Was it like the fitness side of it? Was it the physique? Was it the... if you even know.
No, it was because he was a smooth talker and I was going to be really famous and make lots of money. We even went car shopping for real fancy cars. I just bought into it. Yeah. I didn't want to deal with reality. Like getting a job, doing really simple things scared the crap out of me. So here's a guy who's going to like get me into this fantasy world. And, you know, it was an interesting experience. I went to Korea and did it and I got out of it. But I was really lost. You know, I didn't have any direction.
And so we know that in high school you went out on 1 to 2 dates with dudes and it was just
actually nothing. That was after high school, so when I was in college. Nothing. High school, I didn't date
high
anyone.
Nothing.
No, nothing.
And college, a couple of attempts.
Right.
And then you found the lesbian community, the tiny lesbian community. Right. So when did you start having sexual experiences as a non-child?
I think that I was 18. You know, I went to the bar and I just figured I have never had sex with a woman before. So the first one that asked me to go home, I'm going to like take charts and graphs and figure out how this is done because I don't want to make an idiot of myself. So I did that. I just went home with this girl, you know, and there is like no specific thing to do to every girl. So,
right.
But you know, I went home with her and, I don't know. And the first girlfriend I got, I didn't even like her. I just got with her because
I was so hopeful that you were going to say, oh, it just felt so great to actually be able to express any part of myself in that way. And even, but that ended up sort of being,
it did. It just had to do with low self-esteem, not being comfortable with myself. And, you know, by the time I got on the basketball team, now we're in basketball season. that is really when I started like hanging out with these girls that went out to bars and, you know, they didn't even know I was gay. You remember what I look like, way gay looking, but it was so scary that someone might find out that I had to actually see them in a bar for them to go, okay, you're okay. But now everyone on the team had a girlfriend and I didn't. So I just picked some girl who said, okay, I'll be your girlfriend. And you know what I mean? I feel like I kind of went through those things that kids do in 6th grade, 7th grade. You know, I'm doing this now in 18, 19, 20.
Yeah.
So
when was the first time that you were able to like have real emotional or sexual feelings towards a girl that you could express and kind of celebrate?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. I think honestly that I would have to say not until I met my wife at 39. I would.
So you had,
I don't. I think that when you...
Because I know a couple of women that you dated, you know. Right. I mean, you definitely had relationships, but...
Lisa, she was an alcoholic. I was a drug addict. You know what I mean? I think one unhealthy relationship after another. And you've got to remember, too, I was feeling male and presenting myself to these lesbians
who
as another woman,
women.
And it just wasn't clicking for me. So when you're not living authentically, how can you expect to give yourself to someone else authentically? So it just was a frustrating journey, those relationships for me.
Do you mind if I ask what drugs?
Oh, sure. Yeah, really, methamphetamine was the first one that really took me down. I discovered that at 19. I thought it was a line of cocaine, and I had done that before. It was okay. But I did this stuff, and immediately I was like, wow, this is what's been missing in my life. And so, I think for me, meth lasted about a year at a time, and I'd have to quit. So twice I did meth for about a year, and and then I met a girl, and she became my methamphetamine. I quit the meth, and she became my drug. And I quit for 4 years, and... You know, it was alcohol as well, and later in life became opiates, Oxycontin, Percocets.
And I guess maybe we should point out that you got injured right? I mean, you got physically hurt at a certain point.
Oh yeah, that's right. You know, in my late 30s, I went to a punk rock bar. I was dating a girl. I was her first lesbian relationship, and this was her life before we got together. And I said, yeah, let's go. And, you know, I was drinking, and I don't know what I was saying in the bar. I was probably saying stupid stuff. And a girl had punched my girlfriend in the face, and I went to defend her, and I got jumped by 10 guys and was called lesbian, dyke. You know, and I really hesitate to call that a hate crime because I don't feel like they sought me out. I think it was, say whatever you can to be insulting while you're beating the shit out of someone. And they were an angry group of people. Right. So, you know, I think that, yes, I was targeted a little bit because I was different, and they used that to do name calling. But yeah, that was a pretty messed up scene. Yeah.
What did your mom know about all of this when it was going on? And for that matter, my dad.
Which part of the drugs?
All of it. Like, when did you say to your mom, I like girls?
Oh, my God. It's so interesting you asked me that question. Because my mom and I were, I think we were on our way to Prescott. I was 19, and I had a friend who was encouraging me, you know, you need to let your mom know. You need to let your family know. And I thought, okay, I've got her in a car for 2 hours. We're going to Prescott. You are going to be there. And I told her, you know, I'm gay, and I think that my fear was that I was going to see you, and now my mom knows this, and she might tell your dad, was that I would be looked at as like I was going to influence you, or that I was, this is a horrible thing. This was like in the early 80s, mid 80s, and I've heard rumors that we were predators, that we were monsters, and I'm telling my mom this, but I have this beautiful relationship with you, and I was afraid that they weren't going to want me to be around you, you know. And I never,
but that's not what I'm totally crying, you guys. Sorry, right. But that's not what they. That was not the reaction that you got. What you were worried about wasn't
right.
The reaction that happened. What did
she feel
say?
Like I, you know, because we were going to sleep. Grammy and Grandpa had these two twin beds that were pushed together, and me, you were going to sleep in that room. And I feel like in my mind, and I'm sure my mom didn't say this, but something about the sleeping arrangements. And I know she didn't say that because we did sleep in that room.
Oh, yeah. I remember, like,
right.
I remember the feeling of the crack in the bed.
Right.
Of, like, the, like, worrying that I was going to fall and push the beds apart and all, but when we were lying next to each other.
Right.
I know we got to sleep together.
But I do. And I see, I think I had so much suppressed shame and horrible feelings about myself that I, you know, heard things that our family would never say anything like that. But it's interesting because that night you talked to me, you like, you were 10 years old and you were so articulate and you were so mature. And I remember you telling me like some really deep thoughts you had about something going on in your life. And that whole trip was very significant to me, you know, here. You know, sometimes I felt like you were older than me because here you're at 10 and I'm 20 and I'm like looking at you. I think my chin was on the ground. Like, you're so perceptive to what these adults in your life are doing, you know?
Well, in fairness, we were only children, so right. We were used to being around grownups. So maybe right. We just got comfortable with stuff like that in a different way. And especially my dad was just so expressive to me. You know, it was that difference between maybe parents who don't necessarily talk to their children as though they're bright for some reason because they're
right.
Younger. And you know, my dad, he just assumes that people are really smart and he
right.
Will treat them that way. And they'll, and then they respond in kind. And so I think I was really lucky because he just assumed I would get stuff, you know, not in a way where he was like forcing anything I wasn't ready for in terms of like, now you have to read Shakespeare cause you're this old or
no.
Whatever. But you know, you just get so used to being around grownups. But I just was going to say, I never, and I think this is probably true for a lot of people who have at that time gay, you know, as it was presenting itself then,
sure.
Because that's all you could do is gay. I never thought of you one way or the other. As I think children, they kind of just do whatever They just they adjust to whatever other people tell them is true, or they figure it out on their own, or they see. I mean, little kids know the difference. You know, kids pick stuff up everywhere. I guess I'm probably going to erase all of that because I just didn't say anything articulate after you just finished saying, like, you were so articulate. But I just never thought of you as straight or gay. I just thought of you as you. At the time, your name was Julie, but that's just the name that you were called. It's not like, you know what I mean? I just never thought of you as, oh, Julie's this or Julie's that or Julie doesn't like boys. That's weird. It just right. never, I don't ever remember a discovery of your sexuality. I just, it was like, and then you had girlfriends, you lived with a girl, and that's all I ever understood to be true about you. So I don't have any memory of, I mean, maybe you do, but I don't have any memory of Julie is gay. Julie likes girls.
Yeah, I don't, it definitely was something, I didn't even want to tell my mom. I didn't want to tell anyone. I just wanted, she had to know at some point. So I never, you know, of course, what we were talking about earlier, I didn't want to tell you. I didn't, it was just something it was hard to talk about back then. So I don't know if I knew you knew. You know, first off, kids, I don't think really care about sex or what the sex or sexual preferences of anyone. They care that you love them. They care that you care about what they're doing, that you're interested in who they are. That's what kids care about. It's the adults that put the messages in the kids' heads that, oh, that's horrible, or you should be afraid of that, yeah. Or, you know?
So, and was it hard coming out with one part of who you were and knowing that that was, you could say that you had made the decision to take the step of saying, all right, I'm going to tell her that I'm gay, yeah. But also, okay, that's sort of what I am.
Right. You know what? You have to remember that at that point, there was no word that I knew of for who I was. There exactly. was a trans Great woman point. Named Renee Richards, who was a tennis player. And born biologically male, transitioning to female, and there was this big hoopla, and this was when I was in high school, that she still wanted to play tennis as a woman. So that's what I saw was a transgender person. And I didn't identify with that. I didn't know of any transgender men. So for me, this was something about myself that I just pushed down, and I don't even know what to talk about it. I know how I feel. But this lesbian thing, there's others like me who have the same body as me and like women, and this is who
That'll
I am
do.
For now, right?
Now,
yeah, I'll take care of this part for the moment.
Absolutely. and so when, and my dad, I guess, found out fairly
I don't know.
Shortly thereafter, I don't
know. You know what, he must have talked to my mom, because I don't think that I ever had that conversation with your dad until later. I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
And so let's jump ahead to you are now kind of about to hit bottom, right? I mean, you talk about you started using drugs and alcohol abusively in college and in your early 20s. But that you would quit for periods of time. And then what would you say your bottom was? Or did you have multiple?
You know what I did? I had multiple bottoms. I mean, I didn't get sober.
When did you get physically sick? When did you have? Because you also had problems with your organs.
I did.
Just try not to.
Oh no! Tell anything is open. You could talk about anything. Yeah. Don't worry. But there is a little bit of an order to this stuff. I discovered bodybuilding in my 30s. I had started lifting when I was 15. My body was changing, and there was nothing I can do about it. So I found a few things: lifting weights. I did marathon running, biathlons. It really didn't change my shape. It kind of shrunk it a little bit. So when I was in my early 30s, I discovered testosterone, and I started bodybuilding, and I was very successful. I had a pretty successful career in that, and I had fun. But I have to tell you, my main reason for continuing with that was an excuse to be on testosterone. I'd look in the mirror, and finally, for the first time in my life, I saw the body that I felt like I should have. So now I was using during this time, I developed a kidney disease, and it wasn't from the testosterone. I was an IV drug user, and I was doing that daily, toward the end.
What were in the vials?
It was an odd substance. I don't know if anybody ever hear of this, but one was called Nubane and one was called Temagesic. They were kind of sister drugs. Mm-hmm. They're agonist, antagonist opiates. So it's something you may get in a hospital. It's like Oxycontin, it's like Demerol, uh-huh. the effect of it.
Okay.
So I had been doing that, couple years daily. And then I developed a kidney disease. I was shutting my kidneys down with drugs. Let's just say what it is.
Closing up shop.
A kidney disease. You don't have a disease. You are killing you're killing yourself. You're shutting your kidneys down. So I quit doing testosterone. And in this time that I was sick, I was probably sick for a good 2 years. I was in bed recovering, trying to recover from this. And in that time, I saw a documentary called You Don't Know Dick. And for the first time in my life, I saw these transgender guys. They were educated, well-educated. They were grounded. They were well-spoken. They were regular guys. And it scared the shit out of me. And at the same time, I related with everything they said. So going back to hearing what people might have said, but they really didn't, I remember saying, "Mom, there's this cool documentary on transgender guys. You want to watch it with me?" "No, I'm busy." And she stops me and says, "Well, you're not like that, are you?" "Oh, no, no, no. This is just some fascinating stuff. I'm wondering if you want to watch it with me." So at the end of it, I said, "Mom, I really related with a lot of what those guys said." And then I heard her say, "You told me you weren't like that." And I was like, "Well, I'm not. I'm just saying. Just saying."
And this is happening when you're living at home with her while you're ill. And that creates a whole different dynamic between a mother and a child as well, in terms of you being an adult and you know, the love that the parent has versus the frustration I'm sure the parent feels about, why can't I just make my kid healthy and mentally, emotionally, and physically.
I think it was the most traumatic thing that my mom ever went through with me. And then you were talking about dialysis, to see your child go through that. So, you know,
you might never have seen that documentary. So I guess what we're saying is kidney failure was great.
That ironic. It was excellent. I would recommend that for anyone struggling with, I'm kidding. You know, and then I saw another one right after that, called Southern Comfort, and it was kind of a sad story. But again, you know, the main thing for me is I finally saw guys that were like me.
I'm taking a huge breath of relief and like just finding, I'm like wanting to roll my neck, just imagining this microcosmic version of what it must have been like to see that and to feel like, whoa.
You know, I have to say though, that there was so much shame by this time surrounding this issue about me. It's great that I saw them on TV, but I had never met them. And what am I supposed to do with this information now? So it was also really scary.
Yeah,
so it took me 3 more years because I was still, I hate that this was going on, but I was still abusing drugs. I was given Oxycontin to help me with my pain with the kidney disease, you know, this whole cycle.
The slippery slope. It's so tricky. I mean, really, addicts who had the painkiller addiction, and I know that you've gone through this since, to not know how to manage pain or to ask the question, I have a serious physical ailment, I'm in recovery, what do I do about pain?
Right.
That's so tough.
Well, you know, and at this point I really had not made any effort at getting sober or learning about the 12 steps. Yeah. Sure. So, you know, let's fast forward now. It's 2005. And that's when I feel I really hit bottom, even more than shutting my kidneys down, where emotionally, spiritually, everything, I was just bankrupt. My girlfriend was leaving. I was being evicted. And at that point, I just was like, for me, I had no more answers. There was no more game left in me. No more, I have a great idea of how to get out of this. I was empty and I was done. So I went down to, it was actually a local LGBT meeting hall. And my life has changed in ways I never would have imagined. But once I started doing those steps, there's one step where you write down your resentments. And this issue, this transgender issue, was all over that paper. Mm-hmm. They told me to be thorough and honest and fearless. And I was so afraid that if I go out again, I'm going to die. So I wrote all this down. And when I saw it with a clear mind, I said, and I had so many fears about making this journey. None of them were big enough to make me not look at this. I couldn't. I thought I'd walk the rest of my life through this world alone. I thought there's a possibility that you guys might freak out. I thought my friends are going to just, they've probably had it already. This is going to be the final thing. But with all that on my shoulders, I thought, you know what? I have to do this. I have to do it. I cannot live my life one more second to make other people comfortable. So it began. And you know what? I have to tell you, we were kind of talking a little bit earlier. I've had a very easy road. None of those fears materialized. I have a dear friend that no longer talks to me, and that hurts. And there's an emptiness in my heart that no one else can fill. But for the most part, even strangers have embraced me. It's just been really a fulfilling, amazing journey for me. And giving back to my community is probably the biggest joy I have in my life.
So what? So you got sober and you acknowledged this to yourself, and you did, in fact, of course, tell us, your family.
Right.
And I will take the credit on behalf of the family, because I obviously am a product of how I was raised. So it has nothing to do with who I am as a person. But we all just, I mean, I guess I could speak for my aunt, Julian's mom, and my dad, when I say that when each one of us were told, we were all just like, oh, that totally makes sense. Absolutely. Oh my God. Does this mean this is part of your healing process? And does this mean that you can live an authentic life? And the answer was yes. And, you know, we were like, awesome.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I've been in support groups and kind of seeing if I could be there for some guys that are just starting out. And some of the stories I hear from families, I just shake my head. Like, how could you ever say those things to your child or your sister or your brother or your nephew or your niece? And I just, I couldn't have asked for, created a better response for my family. I am so blessed to have the family that I do. Like I said, I've always felt loved every day of my life because of my family. So,
and you were, and you found yourself in a place where you know, you touched on it a moment ago, but where you met someone.
I did. Yeah.
And you were of sound mind and body and were able to really cherish that and grow that relationship in a really healthy way. And do you want to talk about that?
I do. You know, that was another one of my fears, that I just started dating this girl. I'm sober and, you know, we're dating for maybe 4 months and I'm looking at this stuff. So I thought, okay, I get it. You know, this is not what she signed up for. So I had a talk with her and I said, you know, I have just got done with my 4-step. And I said, I have to tell you that I feel male and I need to pursue whatever resources or do whatever I have to do to make this happen and to live the rest of my life as a male. And I expected her to say, you know, you're right. I can't do this. And the first things out of her mouth were, okay, well, what do we need to do next? So today we are married. Next month will be 4 years. We've been together 7. And what an amazing bond we had, because she walked through this with me. We didn't know what to do. We kind of figured it out together. So I can't believe how many blessings I have in my life.
Well, talk a little bit about the ways in which you are of service to others, because I know that is such an important part of your life now.
It is. I started going to this gender conference in Seattle. I have a friend who lives there who's a doctor in our community. And when I told her I was doing this, she's like, you've got to come to Seattle. So that year, I met a girl and I said, well, how come you're coming here? She goes, for my brother. I want you to come meet him. And I'm thinking, I'm going to meet her big brother, you know, and I see this 8-year-old across from me, and I saw myself. I saw myself at 8. It was just such a profound experience. And that little boy, like, started a spark inside of me to work with youth. Because what I saw is that he's got some opportunities that I didn't have when I was his age, but he's also got some challenges connected with that.
I'm going to ask for clarification, just in case there are listeners who aren't clear. Were you meeting a girl identifying as a boy who was going to go through the process, a boy who was identifying as a girl, or someone who's already transitioned?
The little girl I met was a biologically born female, and her little brother was just like me. He was born with a female body but never felt comfortable with that. So he was transitioning to male at 8 years old.
Amazing.
So I got to have an amazing talk with his mother, and I went locally to see in Phoenix when I got back, what can I do? I went to GLSEN, which is an organization that goes into schools and helps them to stop discrimination for the youth. I went to PFLAG to see if there was any, you know, finally I found this organization called One in 10, and it's just amazing. It's an LGBT youth organization, and it's expanded now. But when I started there, it was every Thursday the kids could come, the youth could come, and we'd have dance lessons, or we'd have skits that they could do, or workshops, or anything. And what it mainly was doing was promoting them and validating them for who they are. For 1 week a month, or 1 day a week, they could come and be who they were without risk of being bullied, teased, or told that they were bad. So I loved it, but I wanted to be the trans adult there. And it took a while for them to realize I was trans, that actually the testosterone has worked very effectively for me. And So I've really gotten to know a lot of great kids. I'm not able to do the weekly thing anymore, but I do gay camp every year. And last year we had about 16 trans youth, and I was over the moon, happy and excited, because I see these kids and they're just like me, and we share that experience. I'm a 46-year-old guy, but yet we have this thing in common. It's really cool. And I also do panels. I've done several community colleges. I work for part-time for Stonewall Institute, which is counseling service in Phoenix, and we do diversity training for behavioral health professionals. So, I mean, there's so much to be done. And I think the biggest thing that will help our community is dispelling myths that are out there. And I think we do that by education. So I will answer any question. I will, you know, be available to anyone that I can help with that issue. So...
I'm just speechless. I'm just really proud. I don't even know what to add to that. I'm so glad that you did the podcast, and I certainly, you know, I've said this on other podcasts. We welcome your questions and your comments, and you can post them somewhere. You can email me at janet@janetvarney.com off my website. I would say you can post something on the Nerdist website if you would like to. And Julian will absolutely read and respond whenever possible. And thank you so much for doing this. I'm super emotional.
Thank you for having me. This is really special for me to do this with you.
All right, guys. I guess we'll just we'll see you next time on the pod. I feel like I'm forgetting. There's so much that we covered, but I still feel like I might be forgetting stuff. So if any, and pretty soon I have to take you back to this conference that you came into town for, which is why I snapped you up so that you could do this. So so I guess we're out of time because I have to get you there. Nothing else. So just to reiterate, guys, if you have additional questions, or you feel like there is stuff that wasn't addressed, we absolutely will pick it up after this podcast with you in some other form. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, remember when all of time stood still?
As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.